You're listening to Panel Borders, which is an extract from Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. I'm Alex Fitch, and this is the first of two podcasts looking at the work of Jack Kirby on the eve of the release of the Iron Man movie, a character he drew and co-created. This program was originally recorded and broadcast live.
In the studio, I've got Barry Forshaw from Jack Kirby Collector Magazine and the author of The Rough Guide to Crime Fiction. And on the phone, we're going to be talking to Marc Evanier. Marc Evanier has been writing comics for many years. I won't put a number in case he prefers me not to. And knew Jack and worked with him and has a new coffee table book out called Jack Kirby, King of Comics. Barry, what was your first association with Jack Kirby Collector? How did you get involved?
Got in touch with John Morrow, who's the editor, and said, why are you not covering the earlier stuff? It seems for your magazine, Mark may back me up on this, you're covering everything sort of Fantastic Four and then some Captain America before that. But there's a whole a period in the middle that's not being covered, which is 50s and 60s stuff, pre-superhero. And John said, do it yourself. So that's how it started.
Were Kirby's 50s comics something that you were particularly a fan of? Or was it reading the magazine you thought, as much as I like the superhero coverage, I wish they'd cover some more of the obscure stuff?
Yes, the latter really, because I think that the superhero stuff, nobody was better than Jack Kirby. A tremendously impactful, visceral style. But his earlier stuff is more subtle, and without the superheroes he had to work harder. So some of the science fiction stuff, again, Mark will back me up on this, is amazingly inventive with wonderful cityscapes. There's a comic called The Three Rocketeers, which has a single page in which the three characters travel across the galaxy. Each single planet is brilliantly realized in a kind of surrealistic fashion. And he didn't do that really later on because he had to turn out so many pages. So I think his best work is that period.
Controversial. I mean, at the moment, Kirby couldn't be more popular. DC are bringing out a range of archive editions, for example, his complete Fourth World serial. Iron Man, the movie, comes out tomorrow, a character that he co-created. And in fact, the DC universe at the moment seems to be reinventing all of Jack's creations, almost as if they need to look back to him in order to create a new universe, as it were, for their publishing range. I mean, DC Universe Zero comes out today, which, although they've spent the last year apparently killing off the Fourth Gods, reading interviews with the writer, Grant Morrison, it looks like he's trying to bring Darkseid back to the center of the DC universe as a primal force for evil. I mean, this reverential treatment of Jack's work after all these years, is this something you think is very overdue?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Grant Morrison, because if you look at that generation of British comics writers, Grant Morrison, Alan Moore, and co., they are all fans of Jack and pre-superhero Jack stuff. These guys know their stuff. When you speak to any of them, they have an encyclopedic knowledge of the pre-superhero stuff. And they know that was good. And here's, you said I was being controversial before. Here's something even more controversial. I think the Fourth World stuff is full of brilliant and inventive touches. But Jack desperately needed an editor, which is why he worked so well with Stan Lee. So it's unfocused, it's inchoate, it's a bit of a mess, but with brilliant ideas in there. And maybe these new guys, can make more sense of those wonderful ideas that Jack just threw off like a firecracker.
It might be a good time to bring Mark in on that, see if he wants to argue the point.
I'll argue any point.
Mark, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Oh, hang on, do I need to put the headphones on to hear him? Sorry, very professional. Yes, Mark, would you like to say a little about the way that Jack has been brought back to the fore in the DC Universe?
Well, I think Jack, people always go back to Jack stuff. One of the reasons that his work pops up so much with different people is that writers and artists are always very eager to get their hands on it. And one of the ways DC and Marvel have been able to lure the best writers and artists into working for the company is to say, we've got a Kirby project here, would you like it? And I don't know too many people ever turned down that opportunity. And so since people want to do it, and the top people want to do it, it gets done.
Well, the popularity of Kirby in terms of comics that are based on his work and sort of include his name either on the front cover or at least, you know, sort of dedicated to, seems to wax and wane over the years. I mean, in the early 90s, I believe, there was a range of Tops Kirbyverse comics, and then he seemed to disappear again for a few years, and now he's back at the forefront. Do you think this is almost a generational thing? That as new creators start to look at the history of comics, they realize just how important Kirby was, as opposed to just, you know, the co-creator of the Marvel characters, and look back at his work as something that should be delved into.
I think that there's something cyclical to it, but I think it's also a matter of just the fact that Jack has this constant presence in the business, and the business tends to jump around and do and cannibalize different parts of its past from time to time, and so much of the past is Jack's, they keep getting back to him. Just by law of averages, if you're reviving everything you've ever done, which is what the companies do these days, you're going to keep every so often reviving a lot of Kirby stuff. I don't know too many good things that the companies have ever left untouched. They keep bringing it all back, and they bring back Jack stuff.
I mean, I suppose even though Jack created all these characters, both for Marvel and DC over the years, he was only ever really paid as work for hire. Did Jack ever see any royalties from his work?
Well, first of all, I don't think a lot of it was work for hire in a legal definition. It may have been in such. That's a point that I am, for one, not willing to concede. Did Jack see royalties? Jack has received almost nothing, and almost is even glorifying it too much, for Marvel over the years. His estate has receives nothing on the reprints at the moment. There's no payment for the use of his characters or designs or even the reprints of his work on T-shirts there. DC has been very generous with Jack and subsequently with his estate. And every time Darkseid turns up someplace, a toy or something like that, the Kirby estate gets a check, and for which they are very grateful. And same with, you know, Orion. And not so much with the earlier characters, the things he did in the 40s, but all the New Gods, Forever People stuff, Jack is and his estate are compensated.
Sure. I think you describe in one of either your most recent book or one of your introductions to another Kirby book as Lee and Kirby as the McCartney and Lennon of comics. I mean, did you see them as true co-collaborators, or did it vary from project to project?
That's an analogy other people made before me. It's kind of an obvious one, and it only goes so far, obviously. I think people get too hung up in trying to guess what happened in meetings where the two guys weren't even sure who came up with what idea. Mm. I think that you say, you know, Fantastic Four was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Were they 50-50 collaborations or 70-30 or 80-20? I don't know. That doesn't change that they were Lee and Kirby creations, co-creations. There are elements in all of the work that they did together that I think are more Jack than Stan, because they're autobiographical to Jack. There are elements I think are more Stan than Jack, because they just smell like Stan. They just feel like what I know of the man and such. But with a few exceptions, those are hunches. Those are deductions made from outside by people who were not present. I interviewed in 1976 or 77, I interviewed a man named Saul Brodsky, who was the production manager at Marvel when Fantastic Four number one was being done. He actually designed the lettering on the cover and the art touch-ups. That's how involved he was on that book. And his attitude was, yeah, it was Stan and Jack. Why are people trying to figure out, you know, who came up with what was in panel 8? And I mean, he thought it was a fruitless task to try to separate it. And I think to myself, well, I was, you know, I was 10 years old at the time. I'm not going to figure that out if they couldn't.
Mark, I'd like to jump in there and carry Alex's analogy a bit further, this Lennon-McCartney idea. Could you say that those guys, as you knew them, were like Lennon and McCartney as much as these two guys needed each other to produce their best work, but ended up disliking each other?
No, I don't think I would simplify it to that extent. I think that whether they needed each other to produce their best work, I think that analogy doesn't fit exactly. First of all, I thought Jack produced wonderful work before he ever worked with Stan Lee.
Yes, well, I'd agree with that.
There's nothing comparable in the Lennon and McCartney history. I don't remember that wonderful pre-Beatles McCartney work.
Right.
So Jack, you know, when he started working with Stan again in 1958, Jack had a body of wonderful work that he did with Joe Simon, with other people there. And I think a lot of the work that Dan and Jack did individually after they parted was quite wonderful. One of the interesting things I have found over the years in talking to, you know, so many people, you would not believe how many people I've talked to about Jack, has been that people's favorite Jack Kirby work is pretty much whatever they discovered when they were 12 or 13 years old.
Well, that's pretty true, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was at the New York Comic Convention last week, and I met two guys who were standing ready to mud wrestle anyone who says that Commandy is not the best comic book ever done. And I don't get into those arguments. If they love it, fine.
But in a way, it's ironic because your point is true. I discovered those things before the superhero stuff, and I'd see books like House of Mystery, the DC books, and I'd see this incredibly distinctive artist who, of course, was unsigned in those days. There were no credits. And I got to recognize this good artist before I knew who he was. So current generations, the credits are all at the front, aren't they?
Yeah, and your experience is very typical. It's typical of mine as well. What I found, the one area in which I think the Lennon-McCartney analogy does work is that, as I understand my Beatles history, Lennon and McCartney reached a point where it wasn't that so much that they didn't want to work together anymore, but that they couldn't. They had both matured and evolved in ways where they could not go back. And you know, Lennon used to say to people in interviews, people want something from us. You know, they want the Beatles to reunite. They want us to go back and make it 1968 again. We can't do that. We've grown past that. And I think Lee and Kirby had reached a point, to some extent because of extraneous forces involving the business, and to some extent because their interests were diverging, when 1970 was about the right time for them to part company and go off and do other things. We don't like it. I would like it if there was another 100 issues of Fantastic Four as good as the first 100. But you know, we'd also like it if there were, you know, six more albums like Sgt. Pepper. I mean, you can look at it that way. People are capable of creating what they're capable of creating at a given time. I disagree with the statement you made a little while ago that Jack needed an editor at the stuff he did for DC. I don't think there was a person at DC. I was working with Jack at that time. I don't think there was a person who could have fulfilled that role in any sort of meaningful way. If any of the DC editors of the day had been assigned to work with Jack on The Fourth World, the instruction would have been, make it more, read more like the Superman comic.
Right.
You know, the very first time I went to the DC offices, which was in July of 1970 as Jack's assistant, Sol Harrison, who was the production manager and kind of the de facto art director of the company, sat me down, and my partner at the time, and said to us, essentially, you've got to get Jack to draw more like a DC artist. He does. Have him look at Kurt Swan stuff. That's the look we want. That's what you would have gotten if you had a DC editor supervising the material in any way. You would have gotten Jack being told not to be Jack. And to some extent, he had an editor in Carmen Infantino, who was then the editorial director of the company and certainly and soon the publisher. He was kind of an editor from afar on those books in a making the same contribution that some people made under the title of editor on other comics at other places. Jack was being encouraged to be Kirby at that moment, maybe not in the right ways. I think he was given a lot of misdirection as to what the company thought was commercial at the time. I think he made some wrong assumptions. I think the Fourth World work, to which I'm very close personally and emotionally, is flawed in many ways and brilliant in others. And I find with Jack, even some of his failures are more interesting than other people's successes.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, in terms of Jack having an editor at DC, I was reading that with the Fourth World stuff, when he started drawing Jimmy Olsen, that they got other artists to redraw his depictions of Superman, which just seems absurd. Why let him do the comic and then say, oh, but the main character is the one person we don't like your depiction of?
Yeah, there's your example of editorial input from DC. Would you have liked that all on everything? I mean, it's
well, the irony, Mark, is that you were right at the sharp edge of all that, but here in Britain, we saw those books and we thought, somebody's redrawn the Superman face. This looks like Murphy Anderson or whoever it was.
The first two were redrawn by a man named Al Plastino.
Al Plastino,
right. Superman since the late 40s.
But it looked wrong, and you wanted... It's bizarre now, whereas creators are given their head. Any creator can do what he wants with the character, and they're given their head. But they didn't want Jack Kirby's Superman. Even though the body was this angular thing, this explosion of muscle, pure Jack Kirby, the face was wrong.
Yeah, it's an example of the mindset that fortunately does not exist very much, if at all, in comics these days. They sat Jack down and said, in 1970, when Jack went to DC, the comic book industry was more or less officially in chaos in terms of everybody thought the business was about to die, that distribution was dying out. There were predictions by very reasoned, intelligent men that the comic book industry could not last another 5 years. And DC had just gone through a change of ownership and management. Carmine Infantino had just ascended to the top editorial positions there. They brought in all new editors. They fired a lot of their old editors. The company was completely shaken up, and they said to Jack, we need something different from you. Give us a new Superman. Give us a new approach to Superman. Jack did this, and the minute they got it, they said, uh-oh, we've got to have this redrawn by the guy who's been drawing Superman since 1946. That's the mindset that you get into. In many venues in comics, unfortunately, we want it different. Oh, my God, you've made it different. And it wasn't using Jack, I think, to his best advantage. Now, some of that was Jack's fault. I'm not pointing fingers at people who made editorial misjudgments, and certainly the mistakes that were made in comics at that time were made across the board at all companies to some extent. They didn't understand what they had in a lot of their great talent in comics. The talent in comics was always undervalued.
Mark, could I ask another question?
Sure.
Usurping Alex's role here, but I wanted to ask this of you, as you know the man. I did an interview with Stan Lee once in which he said, and obviously anything he says about Jack Kirby has to be reflected through our view of their relationship, but he said Jack was his own worst enemy, whereas Stan was the perfect politician, knew how to deal with the media. Jack, for instance, he said in one radio interview, had started saying, we are really sticking it to DC, And Stan said, look, we don't really go for that. It's a kind of friendly rivalry. And he, do you think that's a fair comment, or does that have to be taken with a pinch of salt?
Well, I think, I think there's some truth in that. I think there's some truth in that Stan it was his own worst enemy at times. Also, it's fascinating that these men have their careers kind of analyzed in hindsight by people like us. Who are spectators to a certain extent. I think Jack made a lot of what you might call career mistakes and business mistakes. I think he also had some very bad timing sometimes where he did the right thing at the wrong time or circumstances. Fate conspired against him. Just dumb luck. I mean, Jack, there were a couple of times in Jack's life where if you had scripted bad luck things to happen to someone, that's what would have happened. They're almost contrived turns of events in his life. Stan was, and still is to this day, a very good, charming promoter of things. And I don't mean promoter in a negative sense. He's a promoter of Stan Lee, first and foremost. He's a promoter of Marvel. He was a promoter of Marvel Comics for years. He's now promoting new properties. He's a charming, good salesman. He's witty. He's quotable. He speaks in great sound bites. He's endearing. You gotta love the guy. I know people who have said things like, when they were working in comics, it was better to have Stan work for Stan and get cheated than work for DC and be treated honestly. It was a more pleasurable experience because Stan was such a nice, warm, loving guy. Then Jack was not a good spokesman for himself. He said he got mad sometimes at the wrong time. I would not dispute that part of it. I think that the relationship between Stan and Jack, which many, many people have analyzed, which I've spent way too much of my life discussing and thinking about, was very complicated, and it worked in layers. There were times when these guys were in sync, and what they produced was wonderful. There were times when they were fighting each other like crazy, and what they produced was still wonderful. Yeah. And there are times when Jack was clearly had a different vision of the industry and the world. Jack was a little out of sync with everybody around him. He was a visionary, and I mean that in a word, in a very real sense. Something would happen with Jack, around Jack, and you'd say, "Hey, this is great, Jack," and he'd go, "No, because what'll happen in 10 years because of this." He was living in the future all the time, and one of the points I think I try to make in the book a little bit, and if I don't, I should underscore it here, is that Jack had an amazing capacity to tell where things were going. Today we would be stunned. If you told me in 1970, "Oh, there's going to be a huge budget Iron Man movie that'll be the hottest movie in the world. It'll open up and it'll be on billboards everywhere. If you describe the magnitude of an Iron Man movie, I would have thought you were crazy. Iron Man was a silly little character who, at best, appeared in a comic book that sold 200,000 copies a month. He's not going to be famous that way. He's not going to be part of the mainstream media." Jack would be completely unsurprised by that. Mm. He knew exactly the value of those characters. And frequently, when he was talking to his collaborators at the time or to the business people about the worth of his services, he was envisioning what the Hulk and the Fantastic Four would become, and they, with these narrow perspectives, would say, "You're crazy, Kirby," and they would pay him accordingly. They would pay him. They didn't realize what the characters were worth. When Martin Goodman sold ownership of Marvel in 1968, when he sold the company, he sold it for what, in hindsight, was like, what you'd pay for lemonade. It was nothing. He didn't understand what the company was worth and the properties were worth.
Mm.
Jack did, and that's why he could never get his due out of these people, because they didn't know what they had.
Do you think if Jack was alive today, he'd be having cameos in every Marvel movie the same way that Stan Lee is?
I think if he was financially profiting from them as much as Stan is, I think Jack would be at the forefront of them. If he was,
Wouldn't though, Mark, Jack be an embarrassment on the set like writers are? Writers are not welcome on movies. Stan Lee seems happy to have signed over the properties and he'll do his little cameo. Jack would have been there saying, while he was still in his uniform, saying, "Hang on, this is wrong."
Like Alan Moore.
Like Alan Moore.
in the timing of this, if Jack were alive today, I think he would be rewarded, if not directly, then indirectly. I mean, people are throwing money at Stan Lee, and deservedly so. I begrudge Stan not a nickel he makes. I've worked for Stan a few times, and we get along great. They'd be throwing money at Stan Lee for his new properties. People are writing him huge checks to create new characters for them. He just made a deal with the Virgin people that is probably, I don't know the dollar figures involved, but it's they're very large checks. And if Jack were alive today, I'm sure he would be reaping the same kind of deals. Unfortunately, and this is one of those problems with Jack's, the timing of Jack's life and such, he died just when that thing was trying to kick in. If he'd lived another 10, 15 years, he would have, whether he got money off the Fantastic Four movie or not, he would still have been a multimillionaire, because people would be paying him tons of money to be Jack Kirby, the way Stan is now paid to be Stan Lee.
Mm.
So, whether Jack would have, had a cameo in the Iron Man movie or something like that, I don't know. That would depend on how his relationship with Marvel evolved. But he would not, I don't think he'd be sitting home, if he were alive today, resenting the fact that he hadn't made a nickel off the Hulk, the X-Men. He would have made his money in other ways. He would have made his money, the way a lot of these guys get their rewards, indirectly. The way Steve Ditko has not, because he does, on Spider-Man, because Steve Ditko chooses not to be in the part of the marketplace, not to be a public figure, not to show up at premieres. That's his own choice. But Jack would be harvesting the benefits of the fame of his characters. That's one of the reasons Jack was so determined to get his credits on things, and why he so resented when people said, "Oh yeah, Stan Lee created the Fantastic Four," because Jack knew that there were benefits. Apart from the certain pride you want in having your name on your work, there were benefits to being referred to as the creator or the co-creator of Fantastic Four. Mm. And he wanted those benefits.
In the second half of our Jack Kirby special, I'll be continuing my talk with Barry and Mark and looking at the impact of Kirby's work in the movies. And you'll find that right here at www.panelborders.com. Thanks for listening.